Yeah, I'd say this has been a show for the ages, having a great time talking with Bobby Sablehouse and Sheldon Candace, a couple of Hollywood guys from Baltimore who met at a bar in Los Angeles, a Ravens bar in Los Angeles. Pete Gilbert is with us.
Yeah, speaking of Hollywood, I have joined you here.
Yes, and then nothing says
obviously.
Hollywood,
no.
Much like Pete Gilbert. Well, it's interesting. Pete Gilbert's here, and there's so many things I want to still get into with you guys. We've touched so much on the upcoming 30 for 30 about Dunbar basketball and what that means and what that entails. And, Bobby, I do want to talk with you about kind of your interesting pathway to Hollywood. We talked about the pictures you guys have worked on and are working on, some pretty big things on the horizon beyond this 30 for 30, which is likely in 2016. But Pete, actually, four weeks ago, you did a story just about the best all-time basketball venues in Baltimore, which I thought was a pretty aggressive story on your part. It had you, and we've all been there, well, not all of us, but a few of us, into the archives of this building, rummaging through very dusty boxes and tapes and whatever.
And unfortunately, what it entailed more was then hearing people talk about those venues and rather than see them, but talking to Keith Booth, talking to Herman Harid, talking to Daryl Wade, Bob Wade's son, about what's the toughest now, what was the toughest then. And Herman Tree, as Coach Tree, they say, he used to talk about, obviously, when he was at Dunbar back in the 80s. And he said, before the game began, first of all, it was standing room before the game began, and they would scalp tickets outside, and we would gather, we'd get huddled up, Muggsy would huddle us up, and we would whip off our breakaway pants, and the place would just go nuts. He's like, that was worth 10 to 15 points alone right then and there. And so he's like, we knew, but then when they would leave, they also knew they were getting everybody's best shot. And you had to go up to Walbrook Junction and deal with the hostilities there. And Keith Booth, who of course played in the 90s there, a decade later, talked about, you know, times they wondered if they were really going to get out okay. I mean, there was the stuff thrown at the buses as it just being hammered out as they're trying to get away after a game. I mean, it was tough, but they tell these stories with such fondness and with such, you know, with joy about what it was and the toughness that they went through and how it made them the men they are today.
And I do want to make this plea again, and Sheldon, if you could, if anyone has any video, anything at all from that era, we're talking about a very aggressive sports documentary here. This isn't looking back at a Red Sox-Yankees series from the 2000s. This is going back to high school basketball 30 years ago. If anyone has anything, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so it's dunbarfilm@gmail.com. dunbarfilm@gmail.com. And we're literally a big part of being here. Thank you so much. It's just reaching out to Baltimore City and saying, if anybody remembers, anybody was at these games that had a, you know, 30 years ago, a video camera and was videotaping those games, please hit us up. We would really, really love to find that footage. And I got to say, listen, I got to give a shout out to my boy, Scott Godek of Churchville Kitchens. He just hit me up and said he's listening. He's like, where's my shout out? So Scott, there's your shout out on the show, baby. Churchville Kitchens. He's got this slogan that he says is quit your wife's and buy our new kitchen. I think you can fill in the blank.
Fair enough.
Love you, Scott.
Fair enough. Well, please contact them if you have anything maybe in an old, I don't know, what did they use to film things in the early 80s?
You would rent a camcorder from Errol's Video.
Yes.
Errol's. And I love the Errol's reference tonight.
We had a family subscription there.
There we go. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, of course.
Mom with a giant road. Camcorder on her shoulder shooting my games. God bless her.
But somebody's going to have it. So, you know, we're just looking at family members.
Right.
Somebody have tapes. Was a former manager of the team. Somebody. Somebody's going to have tapes. We're hoping because it's just going to help. It's going to help us make the best possible documentary we can.
Very aggressive and ambitious on your part to do this. Bobby, all right. So we were referencing this article, Sports Illustrated in 2012. Who wrote the piece again? Staples?
It was Andy Staples.
Staples.
He's like the senior college football writer for SI.com.
Great article. Jay, we may have even had him on in light of this article. It was so compelling talking about kind of your pathway. And for those who may remember you, maybe some people don't, but in the mid-90s, you were the quarterback in the area. And Sheldon, by the way, pipe in here if you I'm sure you've known the background of this story at least a little bit here, but I think my guess is many of your records still hold today. I don't even know if you know that or not, but that's just a guess on my mind. Is that true, you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably still, it was when I broke the Maryland State passing record as a senior, it was a 25-year record. And then I think two or three years later, that got broken. So So I think, you know, I might still be in the top five. They throw more now.
They do throw
the
more.
The game has
they throw
changed.
They throw more now than even do when I did, and I threw a lot. So,
yeah, no one was throwing the way you did back then. I mean,
no, they weren't. They weren't.
I think I saw you hang a 5 or 6 TD day on Gilman in, like, the 95 game, and then Jay said he saw you throw 6 scores against St. Joe. So
36.
Hung a 36 on
in the first half.
I sound like Al Bundy, right? Yeah, Al Bundy now.
Pokai.
Yeah, exactly. Back in 95.
And to be fair, and I do want to reference this, that you do say in the Staples piece, this is kind of you putting this all to bed. But I'm grateful you're willing to talk about it here. Not that anything is too dramatic looking back, in my opinion, but I think it's kind of an interesting backstory to you being here. You're a Baltimore guy. Sheldon's a Baltimore guy. So you are the star quarterback at McDonough, the best quarterback in the state. And you go play ball for Steve Spurrier in Gainesville, Florida. At the time, they were a quarterback factory. I mean, sure. Heisman Trophy winners, Heisman hopefuls every year. They were, I'm guessing, recruiting the 2 or 3 best quarterbacks in the country every year, right? Is that a fair assessment?
No question. I mean, you know, I was recruited heavily by Florida.
Whom else recruited you at the time?
Heavily by Michigan, Boston College. Florida State recruited me, went on an official visit, certainly didn't really consider them. I think it really came down to Michigan and Florida. I always make a joke that this is actually a really interesting side note, is that when I was getting recruited by both Michigan and Florida, I called up the Michigan coach when I decided to go play for Steve Spurrier. And I become really close with this linebacker coach. And I said to him, I said, Coach, I gotta tell you, it's going to be disappointing, but I'm choosing Florida over Michigan. And he said, Bobby, it's disappointing. You know, we thought you were coming. And I said, yeah. I said, listen, it's a great university. I mean, you put out great big 6'5" quarterbacks, and they do very well there. And I know I'm the model Michigan quarterback. I said, but you know, I get the opportunity to go to Florida, throw the ball 35 to 40 times a game, play for a genius like Steve Spurrier. And I said, but, you know, you're going to be fine. You probably have other
do okay, maybe
you'll be fine. You have other quarterbacks in the pipeline. I said, who are you going to recruit? And they said, well, we got this kid out of California named Tom Brady. So we're going to offer him your scholarship. I said, okay.
History and
Drew Henson there too. So yeah
right.
Was,
exactly.
They
exactly.
Did, yeah, they did all right.
Exactly. That's amazing. So you went to Florida because of kind of this ball coach.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a summer camp.
And you get to go to Florida instead of Michigan. I mean, God, man.
When I did the checklist, it made sense. I think what I didn't take into account, and I should have, is I came from McDonough. I came from a very small school. I was coached by two phenomenal coaches in Mike Working and Dom DiMicco. And they were two guys that would, you know, they would criticize me, but they also put their arm around me and tell me that, you know, when I'm doing a good job, hey, listen, you know, that was a great pass, or don't worry about that interception, or the, you know, and it was more nurturing. And here I am. I got thrown into the lion's den, into the pipeline of big time college football. And Steve Spurrier wasn't that. And I think subconsciously knew that going down there. But I was like, you know what, I'm going to be different. You know, I'm not going to let him get to me. I'm going to use Steve Spurrier. He's not going to use me. That was my mentality. But when I got down there, the reality was, you know, he had told me during the recruiting process, I was a sidearm thrower, not quite Bernie Kosar, but I threw from the hip. And that was how I threw my whole life. I mean, ever since I was 6 years old. And so when I got down there, one of the first, you know, he told me during the recruiting process, I will not change your throwing motion. So I get down there, and you know, and one of the first few weeks on campus, he said, hey, I want you to get that ball up. You're 6'5". You need to get the ball over the line. And from that moment forward, all of a sudden, going from this confident kid coming out of Baltimore and McDonough, And getting to Florida, I lost confidence. And when a quarterback loses his confidence and loses his edge, I had a strong arm, and all of a sudden, like, I had lost that confidence in throwing. And so that was kind of the beginning of the end of it.
Who else was there quarterback-wise at the time?
So it was Danny Werfel was the starter who ultimately won the Heisman. He was up for it twice. A guy named Eric Kresser, who ended up playing, actually ended up transferring, going to Marshall and playing with Randy Moss, and they won a national championship. And Brian Schottenheimer. Actually, was there, who's now an offensive coordinator. He was there to learn from Spurrier. I mean, I think he played a little bit, but he was there to
he knew he was going to be a coach there.
Yeah,
and that's amazing.
I mean, that clearly was in his blood. So he was there to be a coach. So I have, you know, still have some lasting friendships from down there. It was, you know, I do have some fond memories, but I mean, in the end, it was the wrong decision. But, you know, I mean, I honestly, now looking back all these years later, I don't give much thought to it. I really don't.
I don't think you should either. I think you're doing okay for yourself.
Yeah.
We have to take a break. I do want to kind of pick up on the end of that journey leaving Gainesville. When we come back, Bobby Sablehouse, Sheldon Candace in studio here on WBAL News Radio 1090.